persons listening to this show should experience varying degrees of euphoria and might radiate a warm glow of truth from their entire being. This phenomenon sometimes lasts hours after a typical brain massage. If you are listening with another lights on listener and they begin to glow, don't be concerned. This is a phenomenon normally associated with Pastor Scheidbach's patented brain massage technique and merely means the truth has set them free. Paul Revere's lantern lighter is lighting the lamps in the church belfry arch, signaling the enemy is on the march, an enemy that would steal from us our liberty. Stand by. The Brain Massage Show is about to blow
Hello,
your
mind. Hello, I'm Jeremy Scheidbach, pastor of the Lighthouse and your brain masseur. Happy Mother's Day. Join us this Sunday and celebrate motherhood with us, 10:45 a.m. My mother's living in Florida now. I don't get to see her very often. What would we be without our mothers? At this time of the year, I reflect on the impact my mom has had on shaping my character. You know, truth was a big deal in our household, especially for mom. The emphasis she put on telling the truth and being honest had a profound impact on me. I remember her steely gray blue-green eyes piercing through mine as she would say, "I hate lying." Nothing riled her up like someone telling her a lie. For her, honesty was not merely the best policy, it was the only policy, buddy. Another big thing for her was speaking your mind, standing up for what you believe. Anyway, I could tell you 100 great stories, but we'll have to get into our show today. So, get ready for your brain massage.
Truth served here, flavored with delectable wit, succulent sagacity, luscious logic, a gourmet meal for the mind.
I wonder what the gay marriage crowd is going to do about Mother's Day. It's a traditional American institution based on gender distinctions, and we can't have that. The word mother is defined as a female parent. It's a word that describes a woman in relation to her children. But that won't do. You can't use these gender-specific terms to speak of the work of mothering because, well, that doesn't take into account homosexual marriages. So what are we going to do? Homosexuals are going to get their feelings hurt. Oh, no! I mean, imagine all these homosexual couples having to endure the torment of seeing female mothers receive all this attention and all this honor and stuff like that. Or the reverse when it's Father's Day for the lesbians. It would reduce their dignity, wouldn't it? Doesn't it? If a homosexual couple comes to our church and one of them puts in their name in the drawing basket, you know, and we draw his or her or its name or he, she, it, whatever this thing is, and they come forward to get their flower because we give a flower arrangement or a plant to each mother that wins the drawing and so on. And what are we going to do? I guess we're going to have to refuse to allow them to participate. And then what? Lawsuit city. Of course, the whole point of homo, same sexual couples is... Well, they're the same sex. So what are we going to do on Mother's Day with homosexual couples, with children? I guess they're just going to be left out. You see, the institution arises out of God's design, not out of human law. Here's a homosexual couple with children. The kid buys a Mother's Day card, comes home, and then got to figure out which one to give it to. Or if they're lesbians and it's Father's Day, and you get the picture. You got a kid standing in a Hallmark rack becoming frustrated because every Mother's Day card he likes depicts a woman as a mother on it. And that's just not right. It's insensitive to his feelings, thank you, Savage. It's discriminatory. Sue Hallmark. Sue the city. Sue. Why don't you just sue God? Ban Mother's Day. It's a bigoted holiday that assumes only women can be mothers. What? The point here is that this nonsense is destroying marriage, and with it motherhood and fatherhood as well. Why do I say that? Okay, get ready for deep massage. First, our Creator, who endowed us with certain unalienable rights, also endowed us with certain unalienable functionalities. With regard to procreation, He designed us male and female, and in His design, He fitted each with specific characteristics befitting them for the production of offspring. But if you think those design concerns on the part of our Creator stopped at merely the physical conception of offspring, well, you're mistaken. Think about this. We agree that all our laws are premised on the self-evident truth that God created us with certain unalienable rights. Right? Of course, right. Then He fitted us to exercise those rights, since rights would be meaningless unless we had naturally the facility to exercise them. For example, the right of free speech would be meaningless if man was not designed to talk. In fact, if mankind was created without the functionality of speech, there would be no such thing as a right to free speech. Now follow closely. Likewise, it would be meaningless to have freedom of conscience if there was no functionality in man of reasoning or no capacity for reasoning and faith and believing, this sort of thing. So it may be said that our unalienable rights actually arise from specific endowments of functionality by our creator. Or in other words, our rights are based or founded upon certain design elements endowed to us by our creator. The reason polywogs don't have a right to free speech is that they can't speech. But we have that functionality. So since our creator created us with the capacity for speech, it is then axiomatic that he intended that we speak. And so we have then the fundamental basis for a right of free speech. Hence, all our laws governing this arise from the creator's endowments. You begin to understand something. Hold on here. Follow along here. Since speech involves the expression of thought, opinion, and or beliefs, then thoughts and opinions and beliefs arise from a creator-endowed facility for reason and faith. And upon that, thoughts, reason, and faith must be free from oppression or from coercion. Why? Because God gave to man this facility of thinking. Man didn't give it to him. This facility involving reason and believing, all of that endowed to him by his creator, with a faculty to express those reasons and beliefs via the functionality of speech. And this can get even more interesting, but we don't have time to dig too much deeper. But do you follow this so far? The idea of divinely ordained rights endowed to us by our creator comes from the revelation from his word and by reasoned observation. Man was given by his creator the ability to speak, to think, to reason, to believe. It is then axiomatic that man has a divine right to speak, to think, to reason, and to believe. Second, the fact that God commanded man to surrender to his will, that is, to his creator's will, and that he has said each individual is so commanded and responsible to do that, then therefore it is axiomatic that each man has a free will, and certainly does use it, doesn't he? And he may choose what he will, speak, think, reason, or believe. Okay, all this has a purpose now to the point. Now listen, God created man to procreate. His design for the purpose was to create man, male and female. Now, the purpose of the creator in his design of man to procreate was not limited to the physical production or conception of babies. The creator designed us in such a way so as to require nurturing in order properly to develop. As an example, notice the woman's body was designed by the creator to provide the physical nourishment necessary for the baby to survive outside of her womb. Now, he did not design the man's body to make this provision. He designed the woman's body distinct from the man's body to provide that need, and so designed the man's body distinct from the woman's body to provide other needs. And the needs that they were designed to provide have to do with the sustaining of the life of the baby produced by the union of the male and the female. From all of these things, certain rights are derived. The baby conceived in the womb is a separate life, a human being. Science will tell you that if you listen to them, with a God-given life, and so a God-endowed right to life. The fact that it has life and that it is its own life is enough to establish its divine right to that life. The baby conceived by the seed of the body of the male and the seed of the body of the female establishes a divinely endowed right of relationship between the parents and the child. The creator then ordained that the man and the woman would unite and become one, and he stipulated that this arrangement was to be for life. So marriage comes along and simply recognizes this union, and laws arise around it and from it. It's like I said last week, laws didn't create marriage. Laws came after to recognize and protect it. So we know there are qualities of the male and the female distinct to each that are necessary for the procreating and thereafter the protecting and providing for the sustenance of the child and therefore creation of the unit called the family. For example, taking this back to the rudiments of nature, while she's feeding her child, the male is providing protection and so on. That's just an illustration of the point I'm trying to make. It goes past that, of course. There are important things the male brings into the nurturing process. And there are important things that the woman brings into the nurturing process that only the male can bring and that only the woman can bring, because that's the way God designed it. He built that into the design. And the point is, as the Creator endowed us with certain unalienable rights and also endowed us with certain unalienable characteristics essential to act on those rights, he likewise endowed us with certain unalienable characteristics for the production and nurturing of children. So that if we attempt to rebel against the Creator's design, there will be consequences. If you rebel against the Creator's endowment of unalienable rights and interfere with the free exercise of our divinely appointed functions, such as speech, thought, reason, and beliefs, well, guess what? This will serve finally to destroy the entire concept of individual rights and liberties, contrary to God's design. Likewise, if we rebel against the Creator's design for family, man, a woman, unite together in what we call a marriage to produce and nurture children, then we necessarily destroy marriage. We destroy motherhood, and we destroy fatherhood. And this is true throughout creation. Anytime a creature behaves contrary to its design, it self-destructs. If man behaves contrary to the Creator's design, he self-destructs. If I drive my Saturn like a dune buggy, I will certainly destroy my car. Homosexuality destroys a homosexual. Nature abhors that behavior so much it plagues with all sorts of diseases. Homosexual marriage destroys marriage. And in destroying marriage, it destroys fatherhood and motherhood. It all unravels. If you destroy the family, well, you destroy society. As regards law, at the very bedrock of all our laws in this country is this truth, a self-evident truth, that all men are created equal, endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. Therefore, the only kind of marriage or social contract recognizing this divinely ordained union to create a family that can be lawful is that of a man and a woman, exactly as the Creator ordained, and as He designed, and gave His divine endowments to allow this to fulfill His purpose. So He endowed the man and the woman with distinct physical, emotional, spiritual, psychological, and so on, endowments in order to satisfy the purpose. And so a union between a man and a woman is the only thing that can be a marriage, and anything else would be a lie. A lie against nature. Now, we don't know how the court will rule, but we do know how God has ruled. And here's the problem. Obama and his soldiers are attacking Christians on multiple fronts. Marriage, contraceptives, the issue of abortion, and so on. His legal counsel representing him before the Supreme Court right now has admitted a ruling from the court on the side of same-sex marriage will set the federal government after churches who refuse to participate in this abominable, life-threatening, life-destroying, family-destroying, society-destroying behavior. Right now, Oregon is attacking a Christian baker for refusing to bake a cake for a homosexual marriage. Well, Obama wants to force Christians to provide abortions. He wants to force Christians to pay for contraceptives. Well, he will certainly attempt to force Christians to participate in homosexual weddings you watch. The homosexual activists are targeting Christians already, and with the help of the government. And that's not going to stop. If the court rules in favor of compelling states to acknowledge same-sex marriage, the problem goes way beyond the undesirable impact that will have on society. It won't stop there. Our problem with this is not merely that we object to same-sex marriage, by the way. It's that the homosexual activists will use it to punish all who object to it and force their lifestyle on our lives and insist that we not only tolerate, but that we affirm their marriages. We're not going to do it. It's not going to happen. And they're punishing or attempting to punish Christians right now. We've never accepted abortion. We're never going to accept homosexual marriages. I think we can say that Christians are being persecuted in America today. Now, People for the American Way published a paper titled The Persecution Complex, The Religious Right's Deceptive Rallying Cry. In it, they list about 7 examples of Christians crying wolf, asserting Christian persecution when nothing of the kind took place. At least some of the cases they cite, I also found to be bogus when I looked into them, and so did not run with them on my show. In a few other cases, it depends on your perspective. But one thing I did notice is this. The deceivers there at People for the American Way left out the many examples of persecution that are certifiable, conveniently ignored all those, you know, ones that no one can credibly dispute. So the article should be titled, The Denial Complex, How the Left is Willfully Blind to Christian Persecution in America. It's here, and it's building, and we had better respond now before it's too late. Sunday night, I'm going to make the case proving Christians are persecuted in America, who's doing it, why it's happening, and what we must do about it. That's 6 p.m. Sunday night. Hold on to the break. I'll be right back.
Encounter God. The word encounter means to meet, to experience, to come face to face, to confront. Many encounters are routine happenstances, but even these can have a major impact on our lives. I'm sure each of you listening to this can think of encounters that made a difference in your life. But the greatest life-changing encounter in any life will be those encounters with God that make a difference. Perhaps you've encountered God in the past, but it's been a while since you experienced God in a vital, meaningful encounter. Renew your experience of God with a fresh encounter this year that will impact your life for spiritual growth. Perhaps you've never experienced God, and He doesn't seem real to you. You can encounter God in 2015, and when you do, your life will take on new meaning and purpose, and you'll know that God is real. Call 805-347-9887 for more information. Lighthouse Baptist Church, 1310 West Bedarabia Road, Santa Maria.
Think every American needs a brain massage? We agree. Go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com and make your donation today or mail it to Post Office Box 2803, Santa Maria, California, 93457. Stand by. The Brain Massage Show is about to blow your mind.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Jerry Scheidbach, pastor at the Lighthouse, and your Brain Masseur, and Paul Revere's Lantern Lighter, lighting the lamps in the church belfry arch, singing "The Enemies on the March, an enemy that would steal from us our liberties." Okay, last segment. When our founders declared that all men are created equal and endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, they understood these unalienable rights were connected to unalienable, if you will, characteristics endowed to us in our creation. So in other words, the Creator has built into man's design features that give rise to these rights. For example, God created man with the capacity to speak, think, reason, and believe. Because God created man with these faculties, it is therefore axiomatic that he intended man would speak, think, reason, and believe, and therefore must be free to do so. And because God declared a command for obedience, it is axiomatic that man must have a free will and must be allowed to exercise that, owning accountability for his choices. Now, these faculties and responsibilities are ultimately to God, and so man must be free from oppression or coercion in the matter of speech, thought, reason, and beliefs. Anyway, the point of interest to my point is that these unalienable rights arise upon and are extensions of design elements or design features that God created into mankind. Now, man was designed by the Creator for procreation and endowed with certain unalienable characteristics fitting to that purpose. He created man male and female and designed them with separate faculties necessary for the procreation and nurturing of children, setting it up so that man and woman would have to join as one in order to procreate life. And then it's axiomatic to understand, therefore, also to sustain and nurture that life. Since all our laws rest upon this fundamental declaration of the Declaration of Independence, it is impossible for marriage to be anything but a union of a man and a woman, and anything else would be contrary to law, since all our law rests upon the design of our Creator. Okay? Baltimore. Most of the reason I've not devoted a segment to this is that I've given so much attention to it in Ferguson. And frankly, the news gets very crowded sometimes. It's hard to get to everything. But also because the stories of the officers in this case are coming out much more slowly. It's hard to really get a clear picture here. An allegation of false arrest has been laid upon them. And one of the officers is having to formally file to force the prosecution to produce a knife that was in the possession of Gray, the fellow who was allegedly killed by these six officers. And all that's very weird. Add to that the political antics of Maryland's Attorney General, and it gets even more bizarre. The sloppiness of accidentally, what, naming the wrong people in her suit? What kind of outfit is that? Charging innocent people. And we're not talking about the wrong officers. We're talking about an elementary school cafeteria manager and a plumber, for heaven's sake. That's just bizarre. Nevertheless, some things here are obvious. First, three of the six defendants are black. And that brings into question the assumption that this is about race. And second, and this really bothers me, the allegation is that police have been behaving with bias against blacks as an ongoing problem in that city. And many complaints have been filed for, I think, some years now. But now, all of a sudden, what, when the nation's looking on, Maryland gets serious about looking into these allegations? What's that about? And then you've got the policy of the mayor instructing the police to stand down and let the rioters vent their frustration. I'm telling you, if this sort of nonsense does not motivate you to get a gun and learn how to use it, you're not thinking very clearly. And finally, as has been observed already, every city where this sort of thing occurs is one that has been run by Democrats for decades. So one thing I'll bring out right now about Baltimore is that you're looking at America in the near future if you don't get the government out of the hands of these Democrats. Well, let's finish today with a look at Pamela Geller's, or Geller's, cartoonist contest in Garland, Texas, the scene of the latest terrorist attack on American soil. Pamela Geller is a political activist whose cause is to oppose Islamic encroachment into our culture and politics. She is known for her aggressive opposition to Islamic influence in our government and culture. Or in other words, she would be the sort that would stage an event like this that would serve to make a point that we Americans can draw pictures of Muhammad if we want to. And do that simply to make that point. Well, that's what she did in Garland, Texas, a while back. In January, I think, the Muslims held an event called Stand with the Prophet Conference in Garland, Texas. So this seemed to Pamela to be a good venue for her AFDI, that's the American Freedom Defense Initiative, presents the inaugural Muhammad Art Exhibit and Contest 2015. So it's something she intends to do every year, I guess. In which her organization offered a $10,000 prize to the cartoonist who drew the winning Muhammad cartoon. Of course, Muslims were annoyed by this, and some of them got nasty. ISIS sent out a hit on those participating in the event. Two Muslim men went to the event at the Curtis Colwell Center to carry out the execution order sent down from ISIS. That has interesting implications. One was Elton Simpson. Not the sort of name you would expect. And the other is Nadir Sufi. Well, that's more like it. And the point here is that we must watch out for the Simpsons as well as the Sufis, if you know what I mean. It's not about ethnicity, it's about ideology. And that's what's going down in Baltimore, too, by the way. But more on that later. These two came with body armor and assault rifles, but did not get into the event before police gunned them down. Hallelujah. One officer got hit in the ankle, and that's too bad, but thank God only that. Now here comes the judge knots with all their judging. It's always the judge knot crowd that chimes in with all the judging, you know, in these situations. Have you noticed that? While some others are chiming in as well, and I'll get to that, this judge knot crowd judges Pamela for putting police officers at risk and for inciting violence. And even O'Reilly chimes in with the reproof, informing us that Jesus would not have sponsored such a contest. Well, let's see now. Franklin said it was wrong to insult a religion, quote-unquote. All right, now before I continue, I must say Franklin Graham has certainly shown a lot more courage and conviction than his esteemed father, and it has been refreshing to see. Should Pamela or anyone set out to provoke Muslims in this way? Let's take a few minutes and think about it as we conclude today. Her argument is that if the first time this came up, you know, back with the Danes, remember, if the Muslims had been stood up to and told in clear terms, you're not going to bully us about this, you're not going to go around killing people because someone draws pictures that offend you. Well, then, according to Pamela, the victims at Charlie Hebdo would still be alive today. So she believes she's championing their cause, standing for their rights and the rights of all others, and laboring to free us from this nonsense. One reporter who supports her said something to the effect, he said, if I'm told that I can't run with a certain story because it might offend some sponsors, well, then I feel an immediate obligation to run with that story, even if it's not one I would have run with, simply to reinforce my right to do it. He said if he allows such intimidation to control his decisions, or even allows someone to think such intimidation controls his decisions, he loses his independence and compromises his freedom of speech. You know, I totally understand what both Pamela and this reporter are saying. Years ago, before it was not so common as it is today to hear someone quote the Bible on secular radio airwaves or mention Jesus or God in that public square, whenever I did it, I raised eyebrows and drew some fire. In fact, I got bad. I was encouraged to cool it, back off, be more discreet, so as not to provoke these attacks in the form of calls or of complaints to the radio station. I politely asked to be allowed to handle this and asked to be trusted, and to the credit of that particular radio station manager, he gave me the freedom to handle the matter, and I did. In the very next show, and on several shows thereafter, I would playfully but pointedly make the point. Like this, you'd better grab your breathing bag, get the oxygen tank, get ready to breathe into the breathing bag, or get some oxygen, so you don't hyperventilate or faint, because I'm about to use that name that provokes strong and even violent reactions in some, okay? Are you ready? You've been forewarned. Here it comes. Jesus. I would sometimes do an experiment and say, okay, we're going to conduct a test today. I'm going to mention certain names of famous religious leaders, and you measure your response to these names. Are you ready? Okay, ready? Muhammad. Oh, by the way, that was back before 9/11. And then I'd say, okay, now you do, you okay? Okay, good. How about this one? Buddha. All right? No reaction to that either. Good. How palpitations, you're calm, anxiety, no anxiety attacks, everything okay? You're not breathing heavy? Good. All right, let's try one more. Jesus. Oh, no, there it goes, over the top, heart racing, nose flaring, mind flaming with anger, breathing heavy, okay. Now take a deep breath. Okay, one more. All right, calm down. Now ask yourself this question. Why does that name bother you when the others don't? It was during this time I developed the Bible Thump Alert, which I used for some years. And the only reason I don't use it more regularly now is, frankly, I just don't have time. I do all the production, and my schedule's so cramped lately, I just don't have time to come back through and drop in all the sound effects and stuff like I would do before. Anyway, the point is, I understand and actually agree with the general idea of what Pamela is doing and what this reporter said. However, and you knew that was coming, right? However, I never did any of these things merely to make the point. If in the course of my show it was appropriate to mention the name Jesus, then I would throw this in to make that point. Or if a Bible verse was pertinent to a point I was making, then I'd throw that Bible Thump Alert in there. But it was never done gratuitously, never done merely to rub it in. I'm not comfortable saying, you don't like me making pictures of Muhammad. Well, here, take this. You know, that spirit isn't a good one. On the other hand, if in the course of some work I'm doing, it involves or requires making a picture of Muhammad, I'm sure not going to sacrifice my liberty on the altar of their religious prohibitions. I'm not going to provoke Mecca simply because I can, nor am I going to bow to Mecca simply because they insist that I do. As for the whole Muslim thing, I've always allowed for a distinction between the radical jihad-headed Muslim and what Obama wants me to believe is the moderate Muslim out there. Now, I've made no secret of the fact that I'm suspicious that the so-called moderate Muslim community nurtures some kind of sympathy or even a quiet admiration for the likes of ISIS because of their quiet. But I must say, on this point, at least one Muslim spokesperson did make a clear statement of denunciation against these two most recent jihadis, and I appreciated the acknowledgement that it's characters like these two shooters in Garland that besmirch Islam far more than those who draw cartoons of their prophet, and I say right on. As for it being wrong to insult other religions, well, that depends. I mean, people get insulted if you mention publicly what some of these goofy religions teach. Like the Mormons, they get a little upset with me when I talk about Brigham Young saying, quote, Adam is our father and our God and the only God with whom we have to do, end quote. You know, dumb stuff like that. I know liberal Mormons disavow this teaching now, but the fact is Brigham said Joe taught it to him, and Joe Smith, by the way, that's the founder of the Mormon religion. And then his successors followed that doctrine, Taylor, Wilford, and all the apostles that served under these presidents of the Mormon Church all believed this. And by the way, the fundamentalist Mormons believe it today, consider it to be the true faith of the church. But when I bring such things out, some get real testy with me and insulted. So if the truth about a religion insults somebody, then sorry. I disagree with Franklin on that point. However, if what he is saying, and I think it is, that it's not appropriate to simply offend somebody merely to make a point that you have a right to offend them, I would agree with that. That's bad form. We leave that to the liberals who delight to do that to Christians all the time. In other words, when it comes to Hollywood or liberal politicians, many of them, liberal media and so on, well, it's fine to insult Christians, but they get all bent out of shape if you offend Muslims. The fellow who put an image depicting Jesus on the cross into a jar of urine and titled it Piss Christ, or that fellow who presented a picture of Mary with elephant dung thrown all over it and called that art, and then, by the way, used our tax dollars to support this? Well, these things are celebrated by the left. But let Pamela sponsor an art contest in which Muhammad is presented at all, and because it offends Muslims, they get all stirred up. Now, that's offensive. I have lit the lamps in the church belfry arch, and now you call and let me know you see that they are on. Call 1-888-770-8000. That's 1-888-770-8000. Now leave a message on our lesson response hotline, or write me or send me an email by going to thebrainmassageshow.com. That's thebrainmassageshow.com. You'll see a place there to write me an email. If you're in a hurry, when you call, just say lights on or lights off and hang up. Or you can just click lights on or lights off and say send when you send me a message by email. In any event, God bless you, God save America, and I'll see you in church.
Encounter God. The word means to meet, to experience, to confront. How would you like to encounter God in 2015? Maybe it's been a while since you've experienced God in a meaningful encounter. Renew your experience of God with a fresh encounter this year. Or maybe you've never experienced God and He doesn't seem real to you. You can encounter God in 2015 and know that God is real. Pastor Scheidbach's series of messages, Encounter God, are delivered Sunday mornings at the Lighthouse. The Brain Masseur is preparing to massage your brain. Tune in Saturday at 12 noon and Sunday at 7 a.m. The Brain Masseur will meet you right here.